You have to live it and you have to believe in it. Going to work for me is not a job.
Bold businesses.
It's been an interesting learning curve.
Do it on the side.
That's what keeps me up at night.
Do it differently.
It is a bit of a risk.
Mate, it was exciting.
Powered by Vodafone.
Hello, I'm Cara Waters and this is the Vodafone Bold Businesses podcast. It's a universally held truth that you don't mix business with pleasure. But in Australia, more than 1.6 million businesses run that gauntlet willingly because they're family businesses. While they come with their own particular set of challenges, the advice that applies is equally useful for anyone wondering how to respond to market changes and plan ahead. Today, I've got family business owner George Karayiannis and advisor Craig West with me in the studio. And we're going to try and pin down what's actually meant by a business preparing for anything. Part of that is about how to have the difficult discussions around planning for the known unknowns. Craig, you're chief executive and founder of Succession Plus, so you've had years of experience helping businesses. What does it actually mean to prepare for anything?
I think the big thing is to take time out of the business, so stop doing the day-to-day work that you have to do every day to run the business, and actually spend time with strategy. Think about all the things that you need to prepare. So what does it look like at the end of the day? Does the business stay around in the family forever? Are we going to prepare it to sell it? Are we going to pass it on to children? Are we going to do something with our employees? And most business people don't spend enough time doing that.
So when you're planning though, how do you plan for something that you don't even know is going to happen? So disruptive events.
Yeah. So one of the things that we encourage people to do is actually sit down and think about what could go wrong. And no one likes to talk about that. No one likes to think about it.
No.
But in any business, there's going to be things that could go wrong. If it does happen, what's the consequence?
And what about for family businesses like Rosebery Service Station? Is there particular challenges?
Yeah, family businesses are far more difficult. And they're far more difficult because typically in a family, you're wearing a number of different hats. You know, you've got family that are actually father and son. So you've got that relationship. You've also got a relationship that's completely different to that at work. And, you know, I've worked with a number of businesses, not saying this is yours, but a number of businesses where what happens in the family actually overrides and influences heavily what happens day to day at work. The other problem with family business is you're never out of the business because when you go home, you're still there. So you never really check out of work. You're always at work, as you know. And George is nodding his head here going, yep, absolutely.
What can families do to create that some sort of separation?
What we do is teach people to actually use that language, teach people to remind each other, what hat are you wearing when you say that? Or what hat are you wearing when you make that decision? And so it's about putting your hat on and saying, well, actually as a business owner, I'm making this decision. As a family member, it's something different.
Okay. So, George, you're the second of three generations to be part of the Rosebery Service Station. It's a significant business with around $1 million turnover, and it's built a bit of a reputation as the last place in Sydney where someone will come out and actually pump your petrol tank and wash your windscreen for you. How many years has your family been doing this now?
We started back in 1974, so it's well over 43 years now that we've been doing this. I first laughed when they said self-serve was coming in way back when and started in Melbourne. I didn't think it was going to be a big hit because the clientele we had, so I could not see them doing them themselves.
Were you tempted to go down the self-service route when you saw other people doing it?
Never have because we thought that would be eventually a niche market. We never thought we'd be the last or one of the last in Sydney that still do it. We still get people drive in. And we walk to the window and they're just surprised. They just look at you.
What are you doing in my car?
Yes. what can I do for you? And I'm saying, no, what can I do for you? And the older generation say, oh, you're going to serve me, are you? I haven't been served since God only knows when. And the young generation just look at me and say, I'm going to do it for you. And they go, oh, it doesn't cost me any more. I said, no, it doesn't cost anything. You just stay in your car and I'll do it all for you. And they're really surprised that it actually exists. A lot of people haven't even heard of it.
And you also have got a mechanics garage attached to the service station. Was that always part of the business as well?
Yes, it was always there. Still, it's the mainstream money maker for the site. When we started, I think it was the other way around, but the workshop has been built up from one mechanic, one apprentice, and now there's four staff there, Evan, my son, my brother, myself, and another mechanic. And the profit margin in fuel has fallen dramatically, so you rely more on the workshop than you do for the fuel.
And so I want to get a bit of a picture of how you remember the business when you were a child. Can you describe what Rosebery was like or what you remember of your dad working there? He only retired last year, didn't he?
Yes, that's correct. At the age of 87.
It's a good innings, pumping petrol and fixing cars.
And working on cars. Well, back in 74, I was only 14 years old. Then there was no such thing as self-serve. Price of fuel was, everybody was the same price, but also service stations would not work Sundays. They'd be closed, you know, late Saturdays, like 5, 6pm, they'd all be shut by then. We had late trading, it was called back then, and we'd be open to 9pm, you know, which was big back then. You know, no one would be open that late. Yeah, it was different times. It was, it would all rely on service and, you know, you had to look after your customers.
Well, I guess that's remained a constant, but what kind of changes have you seen over the years? Obviously, it's quite a different market to what it was then.
Oh, yes. A lot of people used to be price orientated. We'd be within the market range, but never dirt cheap. We have our clients because of the driveway service, and people first started seeing cheap petrol, so they would go out there, but they weren't used to doing their own tyres and checking their own oil and all that. And people have realised now it's just not really price what they look at anymore. It's more the service. And this is why I think our market has grown now.
I think our producer first spoke to you on a Wednesday and you told her you knew exactly who'd be coming in that afternoon to fill up and how much they'd want. How important is that repeat business for you in economic terms?
Oh, for us, it's a major turnover. It's just that because we have a niche market and they come from far and away, and us knowing that, like that Wednesday afternoon, so-and-so is going to pull in, I can virtually tell you roughly what time they'd be coming after work or after they've gone to the shops or went to the midday movie and at the local picture show or something. We know we've grown up with a lot of our customers there. Their grandkids are coming in now.
And so can you give us an idea of your plans with the business? Do you want to grow it or what's next?
The size of the business it is now is we're quite content where it is. If we stay where we are or grows slightly bigger, as in volume and that, we wouldn't mind, but we don't want to get it much bigger because I really believe that we will lose that personal service and that is where we thrive on.
So with a petrol station and a garage, they're pretty defined service offerings. How do you respond to market changes and can you innovate or be disruptive?
We run it as two separate businesses, even though it's on one site. If it was just a workshop, you'd have to have a problem to drive in. But because the petrol side's there, they drive in, fill up the car and they say, oh, you know what, my car's due for a service. Will you be able to fit it in? You know, I've got a flat tyre or can you check it? I check it and there's a nail in it. So will you be able to repair it for me now? I said, yeah, sure. And they put on the other workshop side and they'd fix it. And that's how the petrol side actually helps the workshop side. It's, it goes hand in hand.
And Craig, how would you approach that question with George? What kind of possible disruptions might there be?
Oh, look, I think, interestingly, they've got a very good niche already because they're doing something that most people aren't doing. So they're already in a bit of a niche and they're already being a little bit disruptive because driveway, you know, there's no way I'd get driveway service at my local service station. I can tell you now, there's not a chance. I guess, you know, when you look at any business and particularly when we're talking about this particular industry, you've got to think about, well, what could change? And there's lots of media and talk about, you know, driverless cars and electric cars. And I wonder whether you can start to think about, given that you've got a really loyal and regular customer base, you know, educating people around what that might look like. And, you know, a lot of people, it's not coming tomorrow, but it's coming. So do we start to think about training some of our staff in electric cars, and do we have a charging point at the service station? Do we have a service technician that's really experienced in that? Because, you know, if I had an electric car, I wouldn't know where to go. So, you know, you've got to start to think about in your industry, what else could change? What's going to disrupt? What's going to come along that's different? And then how do I take advantage of that? What could I do? What could I add? I'd imagine people come to you for advice as well. If you're having people in every week, it's certainly something you've got a really good relationship with them already. You sound like you know more about them than their family in some cases. So what else could you help them with in terms of anything to do with their vehicle? What tyres do they need? What accessories can you buy? What about new technology that's coming out? I think that's probably an opportunity to start to say, okay, let's get a bit of positioning around actually helping you with anything to do with your car, not just fixing it, but which car do I buy next? You know, my car's gone, I'm going to buy a new one. What do you recommend? What are the options?
That's right. We do get a lot of people who ask us when they're selling their car, what do you recommend to buy? And
so my question would be, do you charge for that?
No, we don't.
So there's an opportunity, I think, and I might be wrong, but I don't know your customer base very well, but they sound to me like they're loyal, they like you, they trust your judgment. I wonder if you could have some sort of, you know, there's lots of buyer's agents now for cars. The last two cars I've bought, I haven't gone anywhere. I've got a buyer's agent and said, get me a car. This guy makes a full-time living out of it, so I don't know that you couldn't do the growth part that you were talking about before. Maybe an element of it actually comes from doing adding a service like that to what you're already doing.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I've never really thought of something like that, you know. But when you were talking about earlier about electric cars and things like that, the hybrid cars are in now and we're working on them at the moment. The electric cars are really the next stage, I think. It's very early stages at the moment, but those charging stations are few and far in between. That's another part of the site that our site can think about.
You're listening to the Bold Businesses podcast with Sydney family business owner George Karyanis and advisor Craig West. After the break, we'll take a closer look at some of the challenges for family businesses and how to tackle them.
For a business to grow, it needs a great product, passionate people, the right tools, and when it's a family business, a little extra tolerance. For George Karyanis from Rosebery Service Station, one of their most powerful tools is their telco and the support and technology Vodafone provides to help them succeed. Like Rosebery Service Station, as a Vodafone customer, you'll have access to a range of world-leading business apps to streamline business processes and help solve the many challenges of running a small business. To start your journey, search Vodafone Business.
Craig West, you founded Succession Plus and have advised thousands of businesses. You talk about teaching people the three circle model for family business. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we talked a little bit before about wearing different hats. The three circle model basically puts that into a theoretical model. And what it says is there's actually three circles that overlap. One circle is ownership. The other circle is employee. So if you work in a family business, whether you're an owner or not, you sit in that circle. And lastly, there's a circle about family. You've got your family priority and you've got your business priority. And what the research tells us is that the family will nearly always win, nearly always.
And presumably another issue is some of those known unknowns that I mentioned earlier, and they're what can throw a spanner in the works for businesses. So firstly, I wanted to ask George what you think these might be in your case, and then I'll ask Craig what he sees as an advisor. So George.
Okay. How the business is really run, I've got my brother, older brother Del. He does the managerial side of things. He does the bookwork. He sort of like runs the petrol side of things and the workshop side of things, whereas we're more hands-on. There are issues there that being a family business, we sit down and discuss matters. Like I said earlier, you do take your work home with you. That's discussed. You never really let go. You might be at work for 12 hours a day, but you still go home. And you still got the problems of what happened during the day and what is, you know, going to happen the next following week. The other thing that you were saying was that you do decide what's better for the family, which is true. Even though there's decisions we can make, they may benefit the business maybe slightly better. If it's a marginal percentage, well, you go for more the family decision than the business position, just as long as it's a marginal decision and it doesn't disrupt the business in a major way.
And Craig?
Look, I think in any business, there's a whole stack of unknowns. And you've mentioned, you know, we'll use your brother, Del, wasn't it?
That's correct.
As a good example. You know, the question I would ask is what happens if something happened to Del tomorrow and he can't work for 3 weeks? What does that do to the business? And that it's sort of an unknown partly, but it's also about, is he able to go and have a holiday for 3 weeks? And if he does, what happens? Who takes over that role? How's that managed? Whether it's known, as in he's got a vacation planned in December, or whether it's unknown because suddenly he has an accident or he gets sick. Now, no one likes to think or talk about that stuff, but unfortunately, it happens.
That's correct. It does happen. I'm sure it does. Hopefully, touch wood, and not in our business. But what it is, my brother and I have always shared the two jobs, if you know what I mean. And that's why when one is away, the other person takes the other role. It's a lot more pressure on the person, but we have both done both roles, so we know exactly how the business is run when the other person is missing.
And George, Evan has now joined the team. What kind of considerations did you look at when Evan joined, and is he going to be responsible for bringing in new ideas?
Well, we wanted when he left school to not just come straight into the family business. We wanted him to work somewhere else. We wanted him to experience what work is about, not under a family wing, as you could say.
It's interesting because a lot of the big family companies actually do that. The Hagues family or the Coopers family, right. They require their children to go and work outside the family business for a little bit.
Yes, well, not knowing that, but that's what...
you were leading the way.
Yeah. And he's very keen. He's thinking, you know, not in the near future because he's still young, but he'd like to turn the workshop into maybe panel beading and mechanical. It's another side of the business you could go to.
And Craig, is this something you see a lot, that children come into the business and have these ideas of changing things around?
Yeah, and look, often that's an area of potential conflict or, you know, an issue within the business, because often what you get is, you know, you've got the older generation, in this case George, been there for a long time, taught by his dad, knows the business and knows how we do it. And then you get someone young coming in who's perhaps worked somewhere else like Evan has, got some different ideas, got some new ideas. I had my son working with me for about 12 months and he absolutely hated it. He just said, this is a nightmare, I can't work with you. And I thought pretty much the same thing. But there's also opportunity, because often younger people have learnt new things, seen other ways of, particularly when you've had someone that's worked in another business, seen other ways of doing things. So it's about, I guess, getting a balance between those two things.
Yeah, you're right there, because my brother and I have discussed things like that. And we need new, fresh, young ideas. Devin was saying to me just to be in social media, whereas my brother and I have never really looked into that. And whereas his ideas should be on Twitter, it should be on Facebook, should have things like that. So those ideas that Evan has are good ideas, because that's really where the next generation is at.
That one's a sensational idea. I think for your business, being in the niche that you're in, it would go crazy on social media, because you've got something that no one else is going to be talking about in terms of every other fuel station. What the best they can do is put up their price.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're all competing on price. It's just a quick dive to the bottom, whereas you're not talking about price. You're talking about get your window washed and your tire repaired. And I think that sort of thing and stories about your customers and what you're doing with them on social media would be very popular and probably bring new clients in as well.
Well, hopefully they will have now with this podcast and your new ploy on social media. So, Craig, how do you balance the need to prepare for anything and being disruptive to stay competitive with keeping that tradition of the business and its brand as well?
One of the things that I think is really obvious in most family businesses, people go into business for one of two reasons. Either they're really good at something, so I'm a really good air conditioning mechanic, or I'm a really good car mechanic or whatever it is, or I'm going into this business because that's what my dad did. The issue with that is that it's not about then being a business person. And so really it's about stopping and taking time, and that's hard to do when you're running a business.
So too busy working in the business rather than on it, I suppose.
Absolutely.
And that's right. George, having that conversation about what the family wants out of the business long term, is that a conversation you've had, and did you find it uncomfortable?
My brother and Del and I have had that conversation many a times. Not uncomfortable, I'd say. It's just that we just got to see which direction we really want to go.
And Craig, what do you see with most clients?
They all have the same conversation, and that is, sounds good. It's a really good idea to sit down and do that, but we just don't have time to do that. And so it's really about prioritizing that as number one priority. And that's always difficult to do. And sometimes it even costs money, because it might mean that you have to employ someone extra to look after the driveway on Friday morning while you and Del go up to the coffee shop and have your meeting. I tell most of my clients to work from home on Fridays. Now, you probably can't do that, but you certainly could spend 2 hours in a coffee shop on a Friday. And maybe it starts out as 45 minutes, because 2 hours sounds like a very long time at the moment. You're looking at me going, oh my God, I can't do that. But maybe you start out with 45 minutes and you just sit down and work on the business and then go back, because you'll be worried about what's happening. But gradually you'll find that it does two things. It certainly gets you and your, you know, you and Del and Evan focused on the business, but it also empowers and encourages other staff, because there'll be other people there that go, you know what, we can actually run this business when Evan's not here or George is not here or Dell's not here. And that's a good thing as well, because it actually allows you then a bit more freedom to say, okay, I'm actually going to go and have a holiday, or I'm going to go and play golf every Wednesday afternoon. And, you know, the other thing that I tell people to do is find something that the three of you like to do that's not to do with the business. Now, the example might be go and play golf or go fishing or whatever it is, and go and do that. But while you're doing that, you can actually talk about and think about the business, but in a relaxed environment, not in the workshop where people are yelling at you, I need this, can you do that, whatever. That's probably something you could try as well. It's always a challenge the first time, because people don't want to go. They don't want to walk away from the business for 2 hours because they think that's going to be the end of the earth. But it's never, it never is.
No, you're right. Funny thing you say that, right in the beginning when Evan first started, he'd go in the driveway and they'd look at him and they'd say, oh, where's Dylan George?
Yeah.
And he'd say, oh, they're just over there. He goes, oh, I'm here to fill you up. And, oh, okay then. And he'd be doing it. But they'd look at him like, where's Dylan George? Why aren't they doing it? You know, and it took months and months and months before they accepted Evan, because he was a stranger, you know what I mean, to our regulars. But they've accepted him. So it's just like, oh, when they drive in, oh, hi, Evan, how are you today? Good, blah, blah, blah. And that's why when you're saying taking time off out of the garage for 45 minutes or so, if we put someone in there, these customers have a heart attack, I'm telling you.
Yep. And that's part of the sometimes that's part of the problem. It's actually about training customers as well. It's not about just training staff. It's about training your customers.
But maybe you've got some coffee shop visits or fishing trips on the horizon.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Bold Businesses podcast. Thank you to Rosebery Service Station co-owner George Karayannis and Succession Plus advisor Craig West for joining me today. I'm Caro Waters, the small business editor at The Age and Sydney Morning Herald, and this has been the Vodafone Bold Businesses series. If you missed any of our earlier episodes or would like to listen again, the full series is available for download from The Age or the Sydney Morning Herald small business website, or you can get it on iTunes. Are you ready?